coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody, and welcome. Episode 54 tonight of the Curious Realm. Thank you so much for everybody that's been tuning in this last year since our rebrand. We are now just over 2 weeks into the rebrand. A year and 2 weeks, rather. We just had our epic 7.5 hour long 52nd episode a couple weeks ago. Last week, we had our good friend Mike Turber on, as well as Dr. Kathleen Ball talking about Knights Templar in Brazil. That was incredible. Tonight, our guest after the break will be our good friend Jared. Jared Murphy will be joining us. We will be talking about Terra Preta, as well as other lost technologies of ancient civilizations that were far, far beyond where we're at now. I mean, when you get to the point that you can actively genetically engineer the soil under your feet, that's the kind of stuff that we'll be getting into tonight with Jared Murphy. Some insane stuff going on down Belize way with him. Some great research coming up. Maybe we'll get into that. Our guest in the first segment here in just a minute will be Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, our good friend, as well as sponsor and the author of the Secret to Everything series, available on Amazon. Make sure to stop on by, pick up your copy of that on Amazon, as well as the Curious Realm store. Along with my thank you, everybody, I want to give you, I guess, a hearty word of warning as we go into the new year. There are a lot of things going on in our world. There are a lot of things going on politically. There are a lot of things going on in the world of disclosure, and it's sometimes hard to bust that fractal apart and to clear the cobweb without getting it all over you. What we have to learn to do is filter information. We have to learn to take what we need and leave the rest. That doesn't mean dismiss the rest. It just means set it aside. You know, don't overload yourself. It's hard in this day and age. And, After our first, the reason I'm doing this is because after our first year episode, I had probably about 8 or 9 targeted individuals reach out to me, asking how they could contact Dr. John Hall. And it's hard when you're a targeted individual. It's hard when you're somebody who's going through something that not everybody can equate to, not everybody can sympathize or even empathize with sometimes, and that's sad. But there are people who are there for you. Remember that this holiday season, folks. There's always somebody who's there for you. We will be getting into that. We'll be getting into crystal energies tonight, one of my favorite topics in the whole wide world. My whole shelf behind me over my other shoulder, not this shelf, but the one over there, is full of crystals, everything else. We'll be getting into that and so much more with our good friend, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, right after we take care of the news of the week. The news of the week is, of course, brought to you by our Facebook group. Stop on by, join the conversation, folks. There's a thousand and over people there having conversations, posting articles about science, tech, what's going on in the world, all kinds of things. Here's a great update of Egyptian things in Rosicrucia. From the Rosicrucian Museum, from Kathleen Ball, our guest last week, out of CNN.com, Elon Musk boot off stage at a Chappelle show. Okay. let's see. Wow. There we go. There's 3,000 books out of popular.info, 3,600 books that have been added to the banned list recently. Out of archaeologist.org, scientists have successfully recreated a dinosaur from chicken DNA. Out of interesting engineering, MIT engineers develop paper-thin solar cells that can power any surface. This is remarkable technology. Out of futurism.com, artists are furious about the AI that draws stylized portraits of people. That is the new AI that's out there, folks, that everybody's taking their pictures with. Apparently, a lot of the filters are copies of styles of artists that are still alive. And out of I Love the Universe, scientists have created a Star Trek-like plane that uses ion thrusters and no fuel. That is just some of the articles that are out there right now. Stop on by and join our conversation there on Facebook, folks. Our guest in this segment, our good friend, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. She is the head of the Secret to Everything. SecretToEverything.com is the website. She is your number one source for alternative health, healing, frequencies, and consciousness exercises. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Kimberly. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. It's such a pleasure to be with you. I always enjoy you and your audience so much.
Always great having you on. You were one of the guests that whenever I finish having them on my show, my fingertips are always tingling, which to me is... It's a sign of extreme energy whenever that happens to me. So that's the feeling that I look for whenever I play instruments that I like, things like that. So it's also one of the feelings that I look for whenever I am choosing rocks and minerals. I'm holding in my hand right now a double point pizza quartz that sits here on my desk on the daily, as well as a large chunk. Probably about an eighth, almost a half or quarter pound chunk of meteorite that sits here on my desk as well. Those are a couple of my meditation friends that I keep around. Those that know me, those that travel the road with me know that I am rarely without a crystal in my pocket as a grounding mechanism. And if I know you long enough, sometimes I may just meet you. And bring you a crystal. Like,
wow.
I'm just moved to some people. I shake their hand and it's like, I can almost feel what they need, you know? And yeah, I'll go like find them a polished stone of that quality, you know, be it the fact that they need grounding or something like that. So I'll go out and find them hematite.
I love it.
Or well, a piece
you're energy
of,
sensitive, though. You're frequency sensitive. So every stone has a frequency, and then the person has a frequency, and you must be able to feel like what they're missing, you know, or what they need.
I definitely am, I guess I don't know if I'm truly an empath necessarily, but I always, whenever I walk in the room, I can tell the person that I need to talk to. I can tell the person that needs help, like almost immediately. So I guess that is an empathic quality. I wouldn't go as far as to say as like I am a trained and honed empath, like some empaths I know.
I know what you mean. But you're also, I think musicians are empathic. Like, who is a musician? And I'm a musician in my own way, not like you. But, you know, I've played piano since childhood and I write music. But I think there's like a channeling involved in music. I think there's a resonance and an empathic sense with music, though, too. So it kind of all goes together.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And that is one of the things I, as an audio engineer, worked with a lot of jam bands. And that's a lot of the reason why I liked working with them was this empathic play between the musicians. They could tell immediately where the next person was going. There was unspoken language that happened between them, and it was really remarkable to see that frequency on stage and to feel that transmitting through the audience. And now we're going to get into what a lot of people might call, air quote here, woo-woo topics tonight, folks. But I'm here to tell you, and I say that, oddly enough, doctor, because a friend of my wife's, who I have yet to meet, she's in one of the mom's groups that she goes to, things like that. They were all out with the kids, things like that, and they were playing, and one of them was like, well, you know, my friend was talking all this woo-woo stuff about her crystals the other day, and the frequencies from her crystals. And my wife told me this, and she's like, I kind of hesitated to tell you because I thought you might, like, take it personally. And I just laughed. I was like, okay, I've got your answer here. And I give people like that a fivefold answer about one mineral, quartz. Ask them if they are holding a cell phone or if they have one in their hand. Feel free to remind them that every time that phone rings, it's using a piece of quartz in the piezoelectric speaker. Every time that they speak into it, it's vibrating a piece of quartz in the piezoelectric microphone.
They are actively looking at little bitty,
tiny, microscopic slivers of quartz in that liquid crystal display.
Yeah.
That they're touching. And then they're using lithium, another mineral and crystal, to power it all. So it's like, it's all right there in your hands as far as the technology that you use every day. Quartz. Like, it's in just about everything that we use electronically. It's a major part of the chips and things like that that they actively make out of silicon. That kind of stuff. So to say woo-woo is a little strange to me, really. It's becoming much more solid science. The fact that, yeah, we can store data on quartz.
Yeah, really, really incredible. And a lot of people don't know this. So when they reverse engineered, you know, the spaceships that have crashed UFOs, you know, I don't like to call them UFOs, but whatever, mm-hmm. we'll call them UFOs. Every single engine that they've ever found on an actual spaceship is driven by quartz technology, quartz run. And I actually believe that in all time, all space, that you cannot find a spaceship, no matter how advanced, future, past, whatever dimension you want to say, here, there, anywhere, that is not driven by quartz plasma technology. Quartz is so foundational for anything super powerful, whether it's computer or whether it's this kind of like quantum type of woo-woo technology like you're talking about.
Yeah, precisely. Now, let's start getting into a little bit of the vibrational qualities of crystals and minerals, and what they can do, not just with mere presence, but with contact and with regular use.
Yeah, the first thing I want to talk about just really briefly is when we run scans on people, which if anyone wants to listen, I think the first time I was on the show, I've run a couple scans on you, but I know I ran one the very first. I think it was the very first show, right? I ran a scan on you.
Yes, you did.
So when we scan people, what we find is 100%, including me, every day, people are starving for minerals, like starving for minerals. Of course, major ones, zinc, copper balance, magnesium, you know, the major ones, even lithium, of course. I mean, our nervous systems are so jangly, of course, lithium, but really all minerals. We're electrical beings and we're being bombarded by, you know, all this EMF and all this dirty electricity and a lot of technology that we can't see, but we can certainly feel. And because we're electrical, we just get so fried out and everybody's nervous systems are screaming on and everybody's immune systems are turned off. And if there was one thing I wouldn't even have to psychically guess or scan, I'm telling you, I could go up to any random person or animal and be like, you need minerals, and I'd be right. it's really bad. And I mean plant minerals. I mean absorbable, you know, minerals. I don't mean like rock minerals.
Yeah. Like I through my scan that you did on me at that point, which was confirmed by my doctor later, after my massive gout attack last time, when I had blood work done, they were like, oh yeah, by the way, you're also vitamin D deficient. And that was one of the many things that was one of the many things that popped up in my scan with you.
I was
vitamin D deficient. That was one of the many things, along with the fact that my body craved CBD. My body actively craved being around crystals, minerals, things like that. It was really interesting because all of that was blind. None of that was, we had had no, next to no previous conversation other than setting up our interview, before your first interview, Dr. Kim, just so that everybody's like, oh, you know, how long did you know her before you had her on after you had the scan done? Literally, the scan was done about an hour before we went live. She was like, oh, yeah, if you want, I'll do a scan of you. Send me a picture. And I was like, oh, that'd be great to show up on screen. So this was not like something that you had days to analyze. This was not like we had had days of conversation or that we know each other the way that we know each other now. This was, I had talked to your PR person and I had set up an interview. And we had exchanged a couple emails about what the process for coming on the show was going to be.
Right.
That was it. You basically did almost as cold a read on me as you could do and nailed it. I remember Billy Joe Kane was in the room because he was the upcoming guest after you. And his jaw was dropping because he knows me, knows me. And he knows that, like, I am a daily CBD user. He knows that, like, I carry crystals around in my pocket. He knows all of these intimate things about me, other than the vitamin D deficiency that your scan showed up with. So it's really interesting. Have you ever done scans with people before and post crystal use or even during crystal use?
Oh yeah, I have tons and tons of crystal panels. So, a lot of people will, ask me to scan them and see what crystals are compatible, what they're calling for. And people call for crystals for different things. You know, they call for them, you know, emotionally, they call for them for activate psychic gifts. One of the things that all the quartz family is so great at is, quartz and ruby and a couple of the other ones. Our record keeper crystals. So a lot of people want to know which crystal they should get, you know, to help them activate the past life memory, if you want to get really woo-woo, because a lot of these crystals were thought to be from Atlantis and Lemuria and other Egypt and a lot of ancient civilizations. And just like you talked about at the beginning of the show with the computer, the ability of crystals to hold massive amounts of memory is amazing. And so we can get a hold of these record keeper crystals, and then I teach people how to activate them, and it can really help you start remembering your past lives and remembering who you are, you know, all time, all space. Because I mean, I don't know what your audience is, but I obviously believe we're eternal beings, and we don't start out, religion teaches us we start out as eternal beings in this life and then going forward. That actually doesn't make any mental logical sense if you think about it. I teach that once you come out of the all, of course, you're an eternal being with your own point of view, and you know, you've been around millions of years and probably going to be around millions and millions more unless you choose to go back to the all, which some people would call God.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not like you could actively be created necessarily, especially out of nothing. That's not how physics works. So you've definitely got to maintain afterward, because at the least your energy changes, but it doesn't dissipate or disappear. So yeah, it's interesting once you start getting down to the quantum level of things. And once you start looking at even once again, I've got the article up right now from CNN Business about new Superman crystals that can store data for billions of years. And they're literally holding up something about the size of a quarter that has the Holy Bible on it. And these things can quite literally are so stable that they could store one of these could store up to 360 terabytes, the equivalent of 22,000 basic iPhones. And they can store that data for the equivalent of 13 billion years.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy.
Now,
are you aware of this though? So, you know, binary and trinary data. What's really, really cool about crystals that I don't know if a lot of people know is crystals are trinary. So they actually have sentient consciousness. They're not just binary. They're not two dimensional. They're actually 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 dimensional. So a lot of people don't know that they actually have a sentient consciousness. So your one quartz crystal is going to have a totally different consciousness and interactive, you know, ability than your other crystal. Like, it's absolutely super amazing when you really get into the deep study of crystals. And what makes the trinary so powerful is the ability, as you said, to not just store frequency, but it also has an output signal, so it can release frequency, which is why crystals are good for active things like healing. They're not just, you know, good for storing. They're also good for releasing and having effects on matter and non-matter.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm holding in my hand right now a Lemurian quartz crystal. It's probably about 10 inches long, probably around 4 inches around, something like that. Pretty big, but when she's talking about a record keeper, just so you know, folks, right here, you can see these little striations in the light that radiate all the way down the crystal. This one has them literally on every single facet of the crystal. They're just all over the place. A very dear person to me gave this to me many years ago, and it's never, ever left my side. It's always on my desk, always near me. But that is an example of what a record keeper is. And basically the concept is that whenever something was stored, it caused a new striation.
Yes, exactly. And just in case anybody has one of the simplest ways to activate, and it has to be activated and released, is to hold that in your hand, and you can literally run your thumbnail or any nail down each striation, and you'll hit that, and it will actually open that like a file, and you'll be really, really surprised, especially if you're very conscious about it and you request to have like a lucid dream, or you're open to any visions or any new insight you get in the next couple of days. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, and, let's talk for a second, because I think it's a good opportunity to talk about the idea of programming a crystal. Quartz is especially fantastic for that. A lot of minerals, you can't necessarily do that with that kind of stuff. But quartz and quartz-based crystals specifically, you can program with intent. Now, basically, that requires you taking your crystal, a little bit of clear water, running clear water over it, thinking of clearing intentions, rubbing it in a salt bath of grounding salt, if you like, what have you. But let's talk about programming a crystal and how you can get the most out of your crystalline friends.
One of my favorite ways to program is, and you have to be careful. Quartz crystals are safe, but not all crystals are safe to do this with. But you can make crystal elixirs, which is why if you've seen these really, really expensive like water bottles, which they have crystals, and then like they're like $100 in like specialty shops, and then you put water in. But what's really cool is you can program your water, you know, with intent. So you because the crystals have this, you know, output signal ability, and you can program for more money in your bank account, or you can program for, you know, attracting somebody into your life, or selling your house, or getting a new job, or it can be activating your psychic ability. It doesn't just have to be like 3D stuff. And, so it's super cool. I like, you know, to do crystal elixirs, because then you're drinking that. That's like bathing it. Like you talked about bathing in it, the same thing. You know, that's washing over you. That's reinforcing and sending a signal out to the multiverse. You know, this is my intent. This is, you're basically using what the matrix computers that run this reality, which are also run by crystals. You know, you're doing the same thing. You're kind of gaming the game. So when you really understand what crystals are and you really understand how they work, you can actually game the game, which means you become the creator of your life. And the crystals are just a tool to do that. You don't need the crystals to do that. You can do that yourself. But definitely, just like any other tool, crystals are an amazing tool to do that.
The crystal elixir brings about a teaching. One of the first things that I have, it's one of those that it's one of the first things that I ever learned about crystals, at least history, occult history, things like that, was amethyst. And the fact that it was used as an amulet by ancient Romans and put in their wine to help help ward off drunkenness.
That was one of the
first, I guess, occult uses of a crystal or mineral that I ever heard of. And I forget which compendium I read it from. It may have just been Amulets and Talismans, a book that I used to check out from my public library regularly when I was in like junior high and high school. But it was really interesting just to see that and see the fact that because it had the color of wine, the Romans just figured that it absorbed what wine did and would increase sobriety, even if carried with you, you know, would cause clear thinking, which is really interesting because if you look at it in modern day concept, crystal and mineral use. For those of you out there that are targeted individuals or who are sensitive to RF, things like that, amethyst is your friend.
Amethyst is your friend. You guys are going to love this one. That is my number one wealth attraction money increase recommendation is amethyst. So, I recommend when we feng shui a house, I recommend you carry that in your car, or your wallet, or your purse, because amethyst does attract wealth and does attract money too. So it's a double good use for that.
Interesting, because I mean, I've got a little bit of amethyst right here, just a small piece. I'll be showing y'all these so that you can kind of identify them, but it'll basically look just like quartz, except it will be purple because of the iron content. And it's really interesting how all of these permutations of quartz have different properties to them.
Yes. They definitely have different properties to them. And there's rose quartz, most people know is a, you know, if you've been wounded by love or you've had a heartbreak or you've had a death, the pet has passed, your grandma, everyone I think knows quartz, you know, rose quartz, even though it's in the quartz family, has a very specific effect on the heart, on opening the heart and healing the heart. And again, attracting love. That is what we would recommend if you're looking for, you know, a relationship, or you're looking to be more open in a relationship, you know, so it's interesting how these frequencies, even within the same family, like you said, you know, are so different.
Oh, absolutely. And now, when it comes to programming your crystals, especially quartz, rose quartz, things like that, is there any special process that you have people follow whenever they program one?
I mean, and again, you can program it into an elixir, or I don't have any special. To me, it's intent. And again, these crystals are sentient. So you need to think, to me, you need to think of a crystal as a person. So how would you interact with a person? You're not going to, hopefully you're not going to yell at a person. I mean, hopefully you're not going to say, go pick up my dry cleaning. You know, they're going to be like, yeah, right. No, you're not going to do that to your crystal. You're not going to demand a crystal to deliver you something. You're going to recognize that kind of as a sentient, interactive being, because it is. And so you're going to, what I recommend is people sit with it. People sit with it. They close their eyes. They hold it. They can do it for 30 seconds. It doesn't have to be a certain amount of time, or you can do it for 10 minutes. You can do it for an hour, but you feel into that crystal. And then I encourage respect, you know, will you work with me, instead of demanding, instead of forcing an intent, and will you work with me, you know, let's say rose quartz, to attract a new partner. And it's interesting when you start asking questions of a sentient being, what you hear. And don't think that what you hear is you, because it's probably not. Because all communication prior to the game is mind to mind. And most communication in upper dimensions is mind to mind. So just because you hear something in your voice, or just because you're like, no, this crystal's not talking to me, I'm crazy, you can't think like that. When you have to start opening yourself up to how, you know, sentient beings like trees and flowers and animals and crystals communicate. And so opening a dialogue is amazing. And I've had crystals wake me up. I mean, in the middle of the night.
Oh, I think my wife was probably one of the first people to ever see me in a shop, like in a rocks and mineral. I love going to rocks and mineral shops. I'm a rock hound. But just going up to a bowl of quartz points
and, I love it.
And finding the one that talks to me, finding the one that like moves me, that when I hold it, I can feel it. And it's the same thing with just about any mineral, things like that. Like I'll hold 20 of them, but one of them will give me the feels, so to speak.
I love that you said that. And I encourage anyone that goes in even a huge shop with tons of rocks, like you'll be surprised. Like,
yeah,
if you keep being drawn to one and you're just touching it, or it feels, unfortunately, I was in Sedona and I had to buy certain things. I didn't even have the budget for like half the stuff I bought. But like, yeah, when I held it in my hand, like it was like almost attached to me. It was like, it became like it. I say it wants a relationship. It was like waiting. And so definitely don't discount like your eye going back to something, or you can't put something down, or like you said, it's a relationship, and that's the minute your relationship with your crystals start. And if a crystal picks you out, it's a high honor indeed. High by being upper dimensional beings. I mean, we think, you know, we're the bomb, but we're not. It's these silent, you know, sentient beings that really have all the mystery and all the magic. You know, you're looking for magic. You want to be an alchemist. You know, there's a whole, which I just took a course in, there's a whole field called stone medicine.
Yep.
I mean, the power of these crystals to move energy, depression, anxiety, heal serious diseases is mind blowing. Can anyone do it? Yes, but they can't, because again, it's understanding the nature of these beings, because that's what they are. They're sentient living beings. And once you understand that, and actually once you understand that about your whole world, about trees and animals and plants and everything, I mean, everything starts to change. I mean, the mountains by your house or the mountains you see on vacation, again, sentient, huge information. You know, go and sit. You wonder why the monks go in the caves and the mountains. It's not by accident. It's not. They understand this living, interactive, sentient record that's all around us that we don't take advantage of.
Oh, most definitely. There is a connection that we have lost. The the easiest way I can that I can akin it is when I was a kid and seeing my grandfather. And granted, I'm 47 years old. My grandfather was, I was in like seventh grade, something like that. I think he was 55 when he died. He was not an old, elderly man at all. Maybe even 54. But to see him, wow. Somebody who grew up farming, somebody who grew up hunting and trapping, to see this person who had a literal connection to the earth around them, articles with him, like growing, you know, 14, 15 inch daikon radishes, you know, like 2 foot long, like 12 pound radishes, things like that. Just insane gardening skills and hunting skills and fishing. Somebody who truly had a connection to the world around him and a grounding, you know, because of that being outside, because of that being surrounded by nature, having a true grounding with that. And I think we tend to miss a lot of that in today's society. Not just the idea of grounding yourself with crystals, things like that, but being a grounded person to begin with. The idea of, I've been trying to get my son into the idea of walking around without shoes, especially in the house, like stay a while, get comfy. Let your feet touch the ground.
You know? Love that. Do that with my scan people. I would say 8 out of 10 scans. The first thing I'll say when I look at your aura, because that's how I start a scan, is I'll say you're coming out of your body. You need to get in your body. So we always think, to be like victorious in this realm, we need to have out of body experiences and this and this and this and that. But it still needs to happen in the body. You need to hold your body. We see so much possession and so much, you know, entry with entities and attachments and things because people don't hold their body. And what a great parent. Oh my gosh. Ask my girls, like, you're not allowed to wear shoes in my house because that grounding, and then they still don't. My parents think it's horrible. I keep shoes in the car. I don't even keep shoes in my house because, yeah. I mean, it's and I'll go outside, and I'll go outside when it's cold, and I stack wood on ice for 3 hours, you know, like the survivalists do, because, you know, your feet get tough and you get used to it. But there's just something about having that. It doesn't matter what you're connected to, gravel or dirt or snow or grass. But there's something about that connection, especially for people like me and maybe people like you. We just need a little extra grounding, you know, and to teach that is brilliant. What a great parent. Like, seriously, I can't believe you said that. Brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's why he has me on here.
You know, it truly is. I think it's something that we have lost connection with. We have lost the feeling of vibrating and being one with the world around us. The ability to slow down and appreciate, and that's truly what it is. It's one of the only times. It's one reason why I keep a crystal in my pocket, is because, yeah, it's like a worry stone. When I start to get anxious or something, I can hold it. And it's something familiar, and it's something calming, and it's something that, it's an energy that I know and I am familiar with, despite anything going on around me. It's a way for me to ground myself amidst it all.
I think that's great. You know, and it doesn't have to be, even though, yeah, grounding stones are great, you know, hematite, black tourmaline. I mean, there's all these stones that they say are grounding. I say whatever is grounding for you, because we're all different. So again, your grounding stone may not be a typical, air quote, you know, grounding stone. It could be something, it could be an emerald.
Piece of double terminated Himalayan smoky quartz is what I carry with me.
Grounding. That's interesting to me. Smoky quartz is very earthy and grounding. But so that's kind of intuitive. Well, at the same time, also being very expansive. But smoky quartz is grounding. So that's good. That's a good one.
Yeah, my son found it not too long ago. It had gone missing, and I had not been able to find it for about a week. And he dug it up and found it and brought it to me. He was like, "Hey, look, I found this." And I was like, "Hey, my friend. All right." And I think that was the first time that he realized that, like, I called my crystals and my minerals my friends.
Friend, that's so interesting.
Especially the ones that I keep here in the studio. The ones like my bismuth that I have here in camera right now. It is familiar to me. And it's one of the pieces out of many that called to me amongst a shop where it was like, "Hey, you, look at me." And like you said, an undeniable pull and reasoning to buy it. The rest of it came along later. But it was that being able to be present in that small moment that allowed me to be called to it to begin with. And the conversations that just that rock in my collection alone have started in my life. When people see it and they're like, "Wow, this is," because it's entrancing when you start looking at the actual geometry of it and the tiny little squares that it grows in naturally. It's wild. Yep. It's almost like, you know, stylized ancient Grecian little swirls. Just really wild, interesting stuff. And I've always been fascinated with geology.
Me too.
So minerals to me, especially crystals, have always had a special place in my heart. But over the last year or so, it's really become minerals that I have been collecting and meditating with and using. Like, I've got a chunk of carnelian here in front of the camera right now, a big chunk of Texas carnelian.
Wow.
And probably about palm size. That's the size I prefer. Is something that I've got the scary thing is I have a big hand. So palm size may be different for you than for me, folks. For me, palm size is, you know, just under racquetball size, if something is completely round, you know. But something that I can hold in my whole hand is what I prefer when meditating or using them in a healing way. Carnelian is one of those that I kind of use when I am getting ready for my studio time, when I'm getting ready to create and write and make some music. That's normally when my carnelian comes off the shelf.
That's interesting, because I would recommend that in general for creation, for opening up positive life choices, for confidence, for power, you know. So that's interesting, because it seems like that's kind of how you use it too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of these things, folks, if you literally Google the mineral itself, or and Google, like, you know, carnelian meaning, things like that, you'll at least get a vague idea. It's kind of like horoscopes or astrology, where there's some science to it, but there's also a lot of tradition to it as well. And a lot of these qualities of stones go back to ancient uses, traditional uses, by cultures all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things too, if you don't want to be so active with it, if you're like, "Oh, I don't have time to sit around meditating like you guys, like you crazy people."
Oh, I don't have full, like 30-minute meditation sessions every day like I used to. But it's something that, like, I've got my Garnet up right now. He's been my friend this last week. It's literally having it near me, having it right there where, like, almost like a worry stone or a fidget widget, you know, where when I'm working at my desk and programming things like that, like I'll have it and just kind of roll it around in my hand.
What you can also though, is you can take a picture, or you can print a picture on your computer, or you can even write your name on a piece of paper, and you can just plop that stone on the person or on you. Or you can even draw, if you want to do healing, you can even draw an outline of a human figure, write their name, and you can plop that on somebody's throat or somebody's stomach or somebody's head. Like, so I love stone medicine because it can be so radionically frequency passive, but it's really super active.
How often do you do stone work with patients of yours and people that you are working with in the psychic world? Because you offer many different classes, many different courses over at Secret to Everything.
Right.
How much do stones come into play with that? Is it more with the healing sessions?
Really, if someone hires me to do a full scan and touches my heart, I often will do, I don't advertise this, but almost every scan comes with healing. I don't advertise that, but I usually work on them. I mean, if I see things in your field that I can remove, or your timeline, or in your energy field, I'm not going to like leave it there if it's easy for me to, you know, take care of. So often, a scan isn't just a scan, it's also a healing, energy healing. If I'm really touched by you, or of course, you know, people I love, my kids, my dog, you know, the people in my life, or a particular client touches me, I will go ahead and print their picture out, and I will place a stone grid, a crystal grid, which is a little more complicated topic, but I'll do a grid for them. And sometimes it's not just for healing. Sometimes it's for attracting a job, attracting a partner, attracting wealth, activating psychic abilities again. It's not just for healing, but it just depends if I'm really touched by a client. Like, I'm working with a woman right now who's had Lyme for 18 years, and she has a family, and I'm just really touched by her. So she's not even going to know it, but I'm going to pick stones and do a healing grid for her, which is great for me because, again, I'm not saying I can forget it, but I can kind of forget it. I can set up a healing grid in my office, and it's working. It's working 24/7 while I'm sleeping, while I'm doing other things. And I really suggest that you guys start playing around with that. You will be shocked.
Now, when you say healing grid, explain to the audience what you mean and how they would go about assembling a healing grid in their own space.
Right. And it's intuitive. So there's no right and wrong way to do a healing grid. People can teach you, but again, it's intuitive. So it depends what I'm going to do one for. So if I'm going to do a healing grid, you know, for certain ailments, for like Lyme, let's say, I'm going to pick calming stones, and I'm going to pick balancing stones, because I don't want to over kind of whelm someone with Lyme. So I would, you know, get a body. Well, I have, you know, anatomically correct body charts, you know, but you can just draw something if you don't. And I will write that person's name, or I will stick a little picture of that person on this chart. And then I will place certain stones on their head and certain stones on their stomach. And of course, I scan them so I know what their particular weaknesses are. And, you know, some stones are antiviral and antibacterial, so I'll pick those stones. And if they're prone to migraines, I'll pick those stones. And if I know that there's a lot of trauma, you know, I'll work in things like, you know, the rose quartz and selenite, if I know their crown chakra needs to open. And there's, you know, if they need grounding, hematite, you know, for their spine, and it'll just be intuitive. And I'll place these on this body chart. And you can do this with a home too, because a lot of people's homes can also be healed with stone medicine, and that's a whole nother subject. But you can do the same thing. You put a map of your home, or you put a map of your land. And it's just really cool. There's a lot to it. But, you know, so that's what I'll do. I'll set up. But it's not just for health. If somebody wanted wealth, then I would use, again, you know, I would use moonstone. I would use amethyst. I would use lapis. I would use aventurine, green aventurine. I would use jade. I would use different things that I would set up a different type of grid to draw wealth into their life. But what's so cool is, again, these aren't just like passive frequencies even working. Each one of these stones is its own sentient being that is also interacting with this game with frequency. So it's a much more living, moving thing. It's like having your own little healing team. And that's what I'd like to get across today, is that stones and crystals and minerals are not passive. They're sentient beings. You want a doctor and nurse team of the highest caliber that's multidimensional and magical? Get to know crystals. Like, bring these beings into your life and start working with them. You don't even have to believe me. Just play with it. Like, you're not going to hurt anything. There's nothing that you can damage. There's no wrong way to do this. But you will be shocked. If your listeners really did this, you will get stories. They will, their minds will be blown. I'm telling
you. I hear it just from the people that I give them to. Those are the stories that matter to me. The people that I travel with, stuff like that, that are literally like my family. Sure. That I've come to and been like, hey, so I've noticed that you've kind of been like this lately. Here's a little something to kick around with in your pocket and think about, you know? And to hear them come back and say, like, wow, man, this thing really helps. Like I can feel it. It's really incredible. And it, to me, it's just about opening a mind into somebody's, opening somebody's reality to something larger and greater, that's right there around them every day. And believe me, you do not need like a double terminated piece of quartz with like 80% clarity or anything like that. You can go out and find a piece of gnarled quartz from the road.
Yep.
And it will have the same qualities.
And we haven't really talked about this totally, but each crystal is a portal, which is why they use crystals for crystal balls and scrying, you know, things like scrying mirrors and things like that, mm-hmm. because they have this portal, multidimensional connection. So, you know, some people don't know, like obsidian has been used, which people think is weird because it's dark, but obsidian's been used for years and years as scrying mirrors. And I think it's so cool because it is dark, you know, John, like the crystal ball.
John Dee's famous scrying mirror was polished obsidian. The ancient Mayans, their priests used polished obsidian. Many, many people have used polished obsidian for scrying mirrors.
I love it. And as a matter of fact, I recommend, just so you guys know, if you do have a crystal ball or you do have a scrying mirror, I recommend you keep it covered at night because it's so super portholy that you kind of want to be conscious when you're working with that and not just allowing, you know, anything in.
It's interesting that you say that. I mentioned that regularly on the show that, you know, we are now in the world of scrying mirrors everywhere, Dr. Kim.
That's
everywhere.
True.
Everywhere. Mm. Cut your TV off. Got a big one. I literally do not have a television in my bedroom for that reason.
Me too. Good for you. And I won't. Yeah, because it's a scrying mirror. It's black. I mean, it's a black mirror. If you watch that TV show, Black Mirror.
I sleep with my phone screen down.
Yeah, Black Mirror. Yep. There you go. That's
it. And you know, a lot can be said that, you know, I also won't have while I would probably have the push widget for a Ouija board, I don't think I'd have a full-on Ouija board.
You have the placard, the little thing.
Yeah, I'd go for the placard all day long, but I don't think that I would go for a Ouija board in and of itself, because that is the tool of divination that's there. That is the intent, the board itself. Yeah, and, sure. You know, yeah, your obsidian sphere. I've got one back here behind me. You should keep it covered. I keep mine covered, whenever not in use, things like that. Not so much with my crystal ball, with my quartz ball or with my selenite sphere or anything like that, but with my right. with my obsidian ball, yeah, it's covered.
You do cover it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not my other crystal balls.
Isn't that interesting?
Not my other ones, but that one. Yeah, because it is a two-way. It's a two-way. And it's different than a two-way conversation like a normal quartz crystal.
Absolutely and definitely sure.
And you know that, like you said, there can be some caveats. There's not a whole lot. It's not like holding a quartz crystal or keeping one with you in your pocket is gonna. Even though I'm here to tell you, smoky quartz, if you love it, it's cool, it's beautiful. One of the reasons it turns smoky is because it was grown near a radioactive environment. Just so you know. That is what causes the smokiness.
I didn't know that.
Of the quartz is normally it's grown closer to like a volcano or somewhere that there was like a seeping like carbon monoxide, some kind of radiation like that, like radon, you know, pretty close to fault lines. Things like that is normally where you'll find smoky quartz. There's a big, big vein of smoky quartz here in Texas because of our fault line. But it's not like carrying that in your pocket leaches radiation into you. It's not like putting that in water is going to leach the radiation out that it was grown near, leach the radon out into your water. Doesn't work that way. And that's what always cracked me up about Crystal Skull Vodka. I don't know if you heard of Crystal Skull Vodka. I love you, Dan Aykroyd. I really do. And I was at the release of Crystal Skull Vodka in Houston. I love you. But you cannot distill a liquid through diamonds. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
You can't distill water through quartz. And right. if you can't distill water through quartz, you can't do it through diamond because that's a more tightly packed matrix than quartz. So you're triple distilled through diamonds. Sorry, dude. Nope. Maybe you ran it over some diamonds and like it passed over somebody's diamond bracelet on the way in, but it's not triple distilled through diamonds. That's not how crystals work.
Earlier.
Just to talk about tonics from crystals, you know. But it's interesting to me that this is all, even if you go back to Kabbalah, if you go back to the high priests of Israel, they themselves had a placard that they wore made out of gold that had 12 different holy stones on it. Each one possessing a different quality. That without that breastplate, you could not vibrationally directly contact God, or touch the Ark of the Covenant.
Right, which is a whole nother interesting conversation we have that we don't.
but just to trace back some of the mineral use, some of the crystalline use, some of the use of precious and semi-precious stones.
Yeah, the vibrational frequency was probably spiritually, expansive as well as spiritually protective would be my guess, you know.
Yeah, Absolutely. Most definitely. Well, now, how does somebody start making themselves, I guess, start getting themselves ready to communicate with either crystals, minerals, what have you? How can they start making their way to recognizing that tiny pull from one of them whenever they see it in a shop or whenever they hold it sitting next to a river?
You know what I think is actually pre-work for that is a couple things. First of all, when we scan people, and I think I told you this before, our soul requests, most people's souls request, wait till you hear this, 4 hours of silence a day. 4 hours of silence. So any amount of silence you can give yourself is going to prepare you for communication of a higher vibrational connection, of course, just by, you know, unplugging your mind and sitting in silence, you know, without all the overstimulation and distraction that we have. And then the second thing that the soul requests, which I think I've also told you before, is a minimum, and I'm scared to go further than this, but we program the scans with 10 hours of nature a week. And I live in the middle of the woods, and I wouldn't say I get 10 hours of nature a week, because we're talking about going into nature, hiking, walking, sitting, you know what I mean, being in nature. And so those two things, I think, prepare you for almost everything that we would consider spiritual. I think that's preparation. It's listening. You begin to hear the whisper of the wind. You begin to hear the rustle of the small insects. You begin to sense the fourth and fifth dimensional creatures and the fey kingdoms and the kingdoms that you don't think exist that do. You begin to hear the language of the plants, you know, and trees, which the trees talk on the wind. You can know everything that's going on in the world by listening to the wind in the trees in your yard, because they talk to every other tree all over the world. And we just aren't taught these things, you know, the language of the trees. And so, you know, when you're running around and you're going here and you're going there and you're going to Walmart and you're making Christmas cookies, you're not really preparing yourself to walk in a crystal shop and feel that subtle call of a being that's trying to get your attention, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That is more than a muddled frequency and way to live. And sadly, heck, man, that's how I live 70% of the time. I'm trying to get to the point where I get back to 10 hours of nature a week. Or where I can even get back to baby steps of nature a week. Much less the 10 hours that I used to do, because there was a point in life when I was assistant youth minister, things like that, where, yeah, like I went out fishing, I went out hiking and, you know, all kinds of stuff, rock hounding. I spent plenty of time outside at one point in life, and there was definitely a difference in my grounding in my day to day life.
Yeah, we think we don't have time for it, but it's amazing when you make time for that stuff, how other things fall into place in your life. Yeah. I just think proves when you, you know, make time for that kind of stuff.
Oh, most definitely. Let everybody know where they can go to catch up with you, where they can go to find out more about crystals, minerals, where they can go to sign up for a session, where they can go to get coaching, alternative health, and frequency healing from Dr. Kimberly McGeorge.
Yeah, secrettoeverything.com. You know, I have a YouTube channel. I'm on social media, and I have an Etsy store that's Secret to Everything. So I'm pretty easy to find if you want to find me. Thank you.
It literally is a very easy Google stalk away, folks. All you got to do is hop on Google and search Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, and she will pop up, as well as The Secret to Everything. I want to thank you for your time tonight and always, Dr. Kim.
What a fun conversation.
Before we leave, say, Nathaniel Gillis, take care of yourself, man. You're out in the hospital tonight.
Oh, wow.
Rest easy, brother. All right. The world needs you out there. But I want to thank you, doctor, one, not only for being a sponsor of this show in our first year, but much like our guest coming up, Jared Murphy, you were one of the many catalysts for our Aww. Change. Well, it was having a frank conversation with you, after your first appearance on Dudes and Beer, when you were like, you know, I gotta say, when Michelle first got a hold of me, I was not about this show at all.
I said no.
And Michelle was like, I know the name is off-putting, but go listen to it and go check out the guests.
Exactly.
And yeah. So that was a big part of my, you know, teeter over the hill of the roller coaster that has been the rebrand over the last year. And I want to thank you for that little extra push up and over the hill. It's one of those, you hear it from a couple, you think it, then you hear it. And then you hear it again. And then you hear it from someone like you and you're like, oh, wow. And sure enough, as soon as I had rebranded and everything else, you actively contacted, as soon as I contacted people and said, we've rebranded, you contacted me and said, how do I sponsor? I want to thank you for your support in that. I want to thank you for your support over the last year. It has really meant a lot to me. And you are always welcome on this show with your wealth of knowledge about alternative healing and frequencies.
Well, I'm always here for you, like I said, if you need me for anything. So, and I look forward to working with you more in the future.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to go ahead and head off to commercial break. So thank you very much for coming on tonight. I greatly appreciate it. We will be in touch with you very soon with a link to the episode, everything else.
Thank y'all. You guys have a good evening.
All right. You too. While you are online checking out everything from Dr. Kimberly McGeorge at secrettoeverything.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is our website. That is where you can find all of our episodes. That's where you can find our story. CuriousRealm.com/story. That will take you directly to our experiencer page. That will take you to our experiencer page, which will actively work at some point. I don't know why I didn't. Anyway, stop on by, check that out, folks. That is where you can share your experience. That's where you can share your cryptid sighting, your sighting of Bigfoot, your anything. If you're a targeted individual, stop on by and share your story with us. We will pose it to our professionals. Coming up after this break, we will be joined by Jared Murphy to discuss the world of lost technologies of our ancestors, things like Terra Preta, other technologies, coming up right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training, and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from this commercial break. Thank you so much to our last guest, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. She is, of course, the owner of The Secret to Everything, secrettoeverything.com. She has been one of our best supporters, champions, and sponsors over the last year since the time that we have rebranded as Curious Realm. And speaking of champions of the show, Jared Murphy is our next guest in this segment during our pre-recorded segment this week. And the reason I bring him up in such a fashion is actively because Jared was one of the many catalysts to the rebrand of this show and to the idea that it was obviously on a bigger trajectory than its previous name, Dudes and Beer, begat for it. And we needed to honor that. We needed to be able to bring these messages, be able to bring these technologies, be able to bring these researchers and their work to a larger audience than that title would allow. So, thank you so much for your input, not only as a guest and listener, but as a friend, Jared, for that. And welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Oh, man. Thanks for that intro. You're welcome. I am doing great. I am happy to have been a part of that evolution. You were well on your way. You had so many great things going on, the momentum and the fans. And it was so fun to be on the show. And then I mean, I think you really framed it well, but I think it's just great that, you know, you see an artist working on something like, okay, I'm not saying he's built the David for everyone listening, but, you know, you see someone working on something that's so professional and it's so great, well done. And then you just step back and go, well, the only thing missing is a hat or a scarf. Mm. And you're like, you're right.
We're branded shirts.
Oh, look at that. Oh. Curious Realm sports shirts. What?
You get the mug too.
Oh my gosh. You
stop
have
on by curiousrealm.com/store. Shameless self-promotion, Jared. You pitched that one right over the plate for me, buddy.
How else do we get support to keep this thing running? NotAliens.com, I'm getting redesigned. I was severely set back. This is working for us, but I have NotAliens.com. There is the new book. I really am trying to get it out for everyone before Christmas. It's so close. And we have this website that I was hoping to have redone. It hasn't been. I did do the live event in Salem. And it was ironically, I'm going to do it again next year. It'll be my third year. I'm going to do Salem again. I will do that again, actually. And then, yes, Not Aliens Beyond Prehistory. It's Not Aliens, Not Aliens Beyond Prehistory. This is going to be the new book. There will be a hard copy. And that will be available along with a paperback that is hopefully still going to be here prior to this Christmas. So what are we on?
And this is a this is one of the original copies out there. If you search the book, folks, I'm here to tell you, you can still find an original out there.
Oh, it's way too much money.
It is crazy now, and it's hilarious to see it, you know, because I go to a lot of conferences now, Jared, because of the rebrand of the show. I've had the opportunity to sponsor a lot of great events across the country this last year, and at some of them, I got to meet some, you know, pretty up there folks, you know, and Nick Redfern is one of them that is just a classy guy, really fun, really down-to-earth dude, but him and King Gerhardt both will tell you that, like, yeah, you know, like, you might be able to find one of these online. Like, they've always got all their books on their table, and people ask if that one's for sale. And they're like, I don't know. I have a problem, like, going and paying $300 for my own book. Like, that's literally my copy. And if I sell that to you, then I would have to go out and, like, spend $300 because that's right. How much one of them costs now.
I know. It's bananas. I don't understand. Don't do that, folks. The new one will be the hardcover. It makes the hardcover for, like, what it's going to come out at so much cheaper.
Oh, God, yes.
And and then there'll be a soft cover, and there will also be a digital copy. And when all of that is running and out, I will work on an audio. Great. But until then, that is happening. And the website, I have met with some new people to revamp it. We're going to continue to plug Not Aliens documentaries and interviews into the actual website of notaliens.com. We have some wonderful supporters that are behind the membership wall. However, like you said, if we can get the Not Aliens store running and maybe get our own little hoodies going,
absolutely. I can point you in the right directions with that. Now, just so you folks know, like, there it is, out of control. Oh, when don't do it. Wait for the new version, believe me. The all kinds of things that are in there have been fixed, have been prettied up. There is a whole new slew of pictures with this research.
Be color. Yeah, in color.
It's going to be fantastic. And actually, last time we had you on, Jared, was just, I want to say, like 10, 15 days before you went and did your
America's Stonehenge.
America's Stonehenge there with Dennis Stone. Let's go into how that went.
You know, it went great. People showed up. That some people drove 8 hours, 6 hours, 4 hours. There was people online listening. And the lecture that was recorded will be out on notaliens.com. That will be available. I do have a Rockfin channel, Not Aliens, but for everyone out there, notaliens.com will have that available to all. It'll go to members first, probably for about a week, and then it'll be available to everyone here in the next couple of weeks, likely before Christmas. And that was a fun one because it was about synesthesias and about hidden things that we think are natural or accidental human abilities that we sometimes chalk up to superhuman abilities that might be more related to maybe ancient lost biotechnology and how that would have related to building something like the pyramids, specifically any ancient megalithic construction or ancient construction with polygonal construction. So with the very ziggy zaggy blocks, for those that don't know, and for the idea that these buildings in pre dynastic Egyptian or Aztec, Olmecs, Toltecs, or Mayan times. These were buildings that were built by very advanced humans that were dealing with the frequencies and energies naturally of the earth, like earthquakes, but also dealing with technology that may have allowed them to directly feel or connect and communicate through soil and or through bio networks that may have been more translatable in kind of a one and zero sort of way, and through a frequency network, energy network that was connected right up through these constructions. And so the whole lecture for about 3 hours, including the question and answer period, is about that. So it's a pretty interesting lecture, and the slides, you'll be able to see that along with the voiceover. That'll all be available here before Christmas. That will be coming for sure.
Fascinating. I cannot wait to see that. We just got done talking with Ella LeBain, or not Ella LeBain, with Dr. Kimberly McGeorge about crystals, healing frequencies, things like that. And one of the concepts that I have talked with Dennis Stone, the owner of America's Stonehenge, about numerous times is, have they checked for any resonant frequencies inside of any of the chambers that are there to see if perhaps it's something that, like, sitting inside the chamber and chanting, you get a different, even visual effect of what the stars are that are rising around the formation.
At America's Stonehenge?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like America's Stonehenge, you know, they did carbon sampling that showed a couple of the walls going back at least 6,000-7,000 years. And oh, wow. That's significant because
it's huge.
Yeah. A lot of people, there's a lot of here. This is so odd. There are cairns, stacks of rocks. There are walls that are snake-like. They are, they look serpentine, like the Ohio Serpent Mound, but they, are all over Connecticut, New Hampshire, Massachusetts. I was just going to say Mass for you locals out there. But the area all the way up into Canada has hundreds and hundreds and perhaps maybe a couple thousand unidentified or first off over 800 known sites that are predating indigenous or what we think of as, you know, the Mayflower shows up, and I'm paraphrasing for everyone, just to get us to modern Europeans coming here 400 or 500 years ago. And, oh, you know, there's indigenous people here. And there are early letters to the governor of Massachusetts in 1620s that Dennis Stone points out that actually have the new colonists asking, look, the local indigenous tribes do not know who built these cairns.
Yeah.
They're all over these hills. They're all over these walls. We filmed it while we were there. About a month prior to me doing my lecture, I was there filming for more. We're going to do a documentary about the primitive survivor cultures post Younger Dryas.
Oh,
how
cool.
They reached down to the Galt archaeological site in Austin.
Yeah.
And that site has a floor in it that's at least 22,000 years old.
Well, and that was one of the things that we talked about with Dennis last time he was on. Was that connection to the hunter-gatherer, because number one, and this is not to say all Native Americans, but the Native Americans of the area were not prone to building structure.
No.
Not like that. Not like, let's build a wall around an area, everything else. No. That wasn't something like the Mesa builders or the, you know, the Native Americans in even the central and west part of America. They were much more nomadic because of the weather patterns that exist on the East Coast. And was it more the fact that maybe these were a means by which for them to find their way along hunting routes? Because absolutely, a hunter-gatherer society knows the stars that rule their seasons. They know the stars that rise when it's time to fish. They know the stars that are setting when it's time to plant. Like, they are intricately tied to the movement of the sun and the moon and the stars.
Yeah, they had the equinoxes, the solstices, the stones, and everything that's set up there.
Yeah.
There's significant indications that this site was used in the last few thousand years. And specifically, like I said, when they find fire pits directly along a wall that is clearly in the 6,000 plus year range, you have to, and then you have letters to a Massachusetts governor going, the indigenous don't know what this is.
Yeah, we just got here. We asked the local population. They're like, I don't know, man, that was here when we got here.
Yep. And that's saying something, because then they have a very strong oral tradition. And,
yes,
you know, there's no mixing it. There's these sites don't add up to dynastic indigenous even, or post Younger Dryas, the people we think of coming down the, in quotes, the, well, the land bridge people. Yeah. That's such a joke. There's clear indications that Central, North, and South America have been occupied way before the biblical flood, that whole Younger Dryas event. And that's catching some people up. And I only say it because we're all at a different spot, but this clearly is just a very interesting space. It's a really neat space to visit while we talk about who are these advanced ancient humans. And I think the America Stonehenge is absolutely relevant because it's a site that represents that in the time of survival, there was clearly a group of humans, Neanderthal, Denisovan, and a mystery 2-3% human race, and possibly maybe another, that were breeding together really at the end of the last supervolcano exploding around 75, 74, plus or minus, they say 1,000 years. But Mount Toba goes off in southeast Indonesia, causing what really probably was the nuclear winter that caused the massive glacial freezing, what really became really at the echoing end of it, I think somewhere between 75,000 years and when we hit that 12,600 year mark, there is this there's an estimation that over 1,000 years, or that the biblical flood wasn't a 1 day event or a 40-day, 40-night event. It was possibly over 1,000 years that fairly quickly you have these flooding and falling apart of these ice sheets, you know, in America, all over what would have been where America's Stonehenge is. So there's definitely, maybe that's the last crescendo of what really is a secondary catastrophe, in that it froze into that state because of what happened 75,000 years ago. And are the people between 76,000 or 74,000 years ago and the people to the Younger Dryas, are many of them just survivors of that ancient catastrophe? And are the echoing stories of like an Atlantean 10 city population really an allegory towards a worldwide, the advanced survivors that built these cymatic, biotechnical, you know, engineered biologies that connected with things, had functioning third eyes in reference to the pineal gland, that it wasn't subconscious or 10 or 15% of our brain, that these survivors of possibly 80 or 90 or 100% cognitive abilities, did they separate themselves? And as they rebuilt, are really the allegory of Atlantis an indication that they were more parallel, that they visited with their man satchels and taught people how to farm again? Did they show up like a Peace Corps and help get people, at least these survivors, functioning on a primitive level? Meanwhile, we have ancient megalithic ruins that indicate maybe a potential attempt to rebuild that global grid. And yet after that 12,600 year mark, we got hit unluckily with something else. Yeah, these man bags show up all over the world. And something I haven't talked about in a long time since you got the picture up. They show up in these deity things and Göbekli Tepe.
I mean, look, there it is right there in Mayan or Olmec.
Yeah, and then on the Göbekli Tepe pillar that they're so excited about, they bring it up in the new Graham Hancock thing right there with the vulture, where you know they have the man bags across the top. And they're also there's some interesting indicators of the animals or the birds that are on the Göbekli Tepe statues are showing up on the Easter Island heads. And for the man bags,
well,
for
everyone, and you know, It's interesting because you keep saying survivors of the flood, because by all accounts that we have, both anecdotally the world over, as well as geologically, there was a mass extinction level flood that happened on this planet at some point. And most of the stories line up with when that happened. Now the question comes to bear, do we also follow the line of most of these stories that it was to reset humanity? Because that's what most of the stories are, is that we kind of got too big for our britches. Either that, or we were genetically bound with something else, and that had to be washed clean. And like you said, survivors, just to flip that on itself, we could be looking at the fact of those survivors may, I'm not saying that they didn't have the technology, they would definitely have the technology, but would they be using that technology to the ends of the best of us, you know?
Right. I think that we've, in any modern example of government and power, I don't think the people who grab power are the people who ultimately are the ones providing a true narrative of any actual past event. I think narratives are written to maintain and control.
Yes.
And I don't, and or the truths are, any truth can be presented in a way that makes a case for a particular opinion. And we see more of that even in what we think of as pure sciences. Whether it's math or archaeology, you have people more interested in protecting their own fragile egos than truth. And the truth are the facts, and the facts are not what you say they are. They're just, here's what we found.
Or cherry-picked facts.
Right. And so when you are willing to only build a story on that, we end up with this very, I think, in fact, that very observation is how you end up with an allegorical story of, well, we suck and we're bad and we deserve to be punished. I mean, what an
No, literally. And hey, brother, we've had the conversation on and off air. My audience knows, former Roman Catholic seminarian. You could not get more hip deep in the I am a worthless skin sack. Like almost literally the words of Saint Augustine, one of the fathers of the church, you know, like I am just a useless waste of a human being just waiting to sin.
What a way to live life, right?
But it was also the fact of I had an experience. I had an experience with a dark entity in my room. It was what most people would call a shadow being. It was during a moment of sleep paralysis, and it grabbed me. And I don't care what you tell me, it grabbed me, man.
Were you high?
Clarified
the situation.
Well, asleep.
Or made it more clear. Like, asleep. You could see them.
I've had those experiences, as high and not high. Let's just say that.
Well, I agree with you, though, because there's no way.
But when I took that to my spiritual director.
Okay.
That's when this story flips, you see, because talking about the survivors, it's one of those you would think I would be, you know, well, Chris, you know, the church doesn't have a teaching on it, Jared. And I was like, okay, well, I got a big problem here, man, because you are like asking me to accept a belief based on spectral evidence, yet still will not accept evidence of the spectral when presented.
And
that's a conflict in my brain that, like, those synapses just don't fire together for me.
So the fascinating, I think, again, is cherry picking facts.
Doesn't change my faith, doesn't change what I believe, but it definitely changes the conduit through which I go to get my capital T truth.
Yeah, because that truth has to involve all the facts, and all the facts are that there are many faiths and practices that have truths.
Yeah. I was like, you can't literally tell me that evil is stalking my soul around every corner. And then when I tell you something creepy, grab me, be like, ah, yeah, I don't know about that, dude.
Well, yeah. Well,
like, the two just don't match up.
Well, even the majority of this world believes in a different. The problem with us is that we're blind because we're Westerners. Yeah. The majority of the world believes in a couple different Eastern philosophies. Of those, and I even by just my vernacular called it a philosophy. The reality is this is their faiths.
Absolutely.
And I even being a once you're Catholic, you're always Catholic. It's just something you're born into. Oh, and if you've lived it, everyone knows what we mean. But I think that in the East, there are many truths that manifest in what, because of the modality you experience the big T, and you say, well, it's my faith showed me this, or my experience in my faith showed me that, or my faith defined this experience, and you get fill in the blank instead of, well, okay, there cannot be paranormal, there cannot be second sight, there cannot be remote viewing, there cannot be factual, experimented with quantum, I would say more quantum than Newtonian physics, experiments with the mind that aren't showing that for sure that there is a singularity, a single congruent orchestral symphony of science. And it includes not a single faith, but a single modality that we are missing. We're banging on the blinky board. We're getting congruent parallel agreement to our individual faith or system, when in reality, those paranormal projections, genetic memories that you and I have talked about, genetic collective human consciousness that's been to a degree proven, Carillion photography, magnetic fields. The reality is that these are not separate systems. So it cannot boil down to one modality. It's not about proving one belief system wrong or not. The point is that they're all experiencing what is really a singular system that we are so detached and broken from, that we use these individual systems we grew up with, our faith or our family of origin stories, where we have an experience like this. Did something grab you? 100% believe it. Did your experience happened? And a lot of people would argue, like a drug induced of any kind, or a hyperactive, sure. More. Yeah. So there's a lot to say that
it could even be the fact, and this is something I've been positing to a lot of people, is the fact that even the use of that changed my frequency.
Yeah.
To where I was in the same frequency as that being.
Yeah, you could have been amplified and on kind of like a steroid. The reason it happened is because you could see it. You were jacked into something you were already naturally prone to.
Yeah.
And then it hyper allowed you to really be present and connect, and not just ethereally, but to actually connect physically with that. But I don't think
that makes my experience so much more frightening. Thank you, Jared.
You're welcome. And I just wanted you to have something to dream about later. Don't get high tonight.
Yeah. Don't smoke reefer, kids.
You're welcome. Curious realms, everyone.
That's right. But in all sincerity, just to loop it back to what you were saying earlier, these ancient peoples who were quite literally living a technology. It was something that permeated the soil that they had. Their life existed to make that.
I think they engineered a lot of things, and the buildings weren't just disaster proofing. I don't think it was just, we need a frequency to protect from an earthquake. No, we need a frequency to be able to connect to Carl for a phone call. And at the same time, I need to be able to project through my synesthesias the color pattern in order for me to take away with my frequency device the shape of this polygonal block. We need to lift it onto this location. We need to move this other thing. We're about to go through a solar storm. The ionosphere needs to be tuned this way. We have X amount of pyramids working at these base subhuman eared frequencied systems. We have energy systems. We have communication systems. I think we're talking about a fully cognitive human race that was bioengineering down to, and this is the scariest thing. These are the things that we don't want to accept as a possibility, but how do you get a chicken before an egg? It's such a funny joke. We keep joking about it. There is no example of any creature on this planet suddenly going from, yeah, I don't want to give birth anymore. Let's just lay eggs. So what's the only other way to do it? Well, you engineer a creature that does it. We can get a gene CRISPR right now. If you want to work on a baby that can play the piano and has blonde hair and blue eyes, we can do that.
Yeah.
We're on our way. We can do gene CRISPRs. We can specialize people.
We have been crossbreeding animals. I mean, a prime example is the dog.
Oh my God. We've been genetically engineering donkeys,
all
horses.
Rooted from the wolf. Every single domesticated dog breed out there originates from that, and within only the last few hundred years.
You know what? Curious Realms needs a new logo, and it needs nothing defines curious like looking at a wolf and a chihuahua and going, is that curious? I know. It's like, how do you go from a wolf to a chihuahua?
A chihuahua.
Oh my gosh. Or one with no hair.
Now I want a chihuahua. I've never forget wanted Chupacabra. To be a dog owner until now, Jared. You've changed my life twice.
You are welcome. It's the birth of everything here, folks.
And cursed my wife's twice. You're 4 for 4.
You're welcome. I didn't realize I was on such a roll. I do think you have a society that we're only just scratching the surface of understanding. And I think if you had these Viracocha, like the stories of Viracocha, why did South America, these man-bag people, you know, a guy named Viracocha, red beard, red head, comes and teaches us to farm and teaches us to count and teaches us to, you know, to do arithmetic and basic living. What do you have? You have a worldwide global advanced that we're in the laser bunkers, that we're in the as in the well-cut engineered megalithic underground, not just spaces, but tunneling systems that were there for society that I think was always prepared and able to manage large catastrophic events on the terrain of the earth. Before I think that they could manage the actual protection of it. And I don't think it's the first time we've ever gone to space. I don't think that these people, when they came out after this actual disaster with Mount Toba and maybe before and after and during the Younger Dryas, they came out and you got all these guys showing up, showing the survivors that did breed with Neanderthal and Denisovan. And yeah, the fish guys, they come out, you got scuba guys, scuba deer coming out of the ocean, and they are teaching you how to function. And then they swim away like with scuba gear. And then the allegory is that, well, they're fish people.
And if you look at these pictures on screen, folks, you can see like, here's the Dogon people that you're talking about Africa right there. Fish human hybrids in Greece, Indian lore, Native American lore, and Native American, South Native American, be specific.
Yeah. I mean, there's clear, the idea of these creatures, Hindu, I mean, they're all over, but the reality is that if you have a more paralleling advanced human society that, again, a fraction of them make it through ultimately a world catastrophe and cataclysm. And simultaneously, you have these surviving Neanderthal and Denisovan and humans and this mystery 2 or 3% human, which may have also been our advanced ancestors. They're breeding and just living, and they're doing primitive work and construction. And then after a whole lot of storms and a whole lot of earthquakes and a whole lot of water melting, you end up crawling across what used to be the capital of ancient advanced Tanis of Kemet, which is now Egypt. And Egypt has no longer capital in Tanis because it was obliterated. They start grabbing and building out of the ruins a society that we call ancient Egypt. And then they mimic and they rebuild and they end up with a construction that, although they reuse, like the Great Pyramid, that geopolymer article references, well, not that one specifically even, but the point of geopolymers is you have the father of geopolymers, Dr. Joseph Davidovits, pointing out that there is actual geopolymers on the Great Pyramid. And if you have a power plant, a frequency tuning, energy, communication, gosh knows everything that that construction could have been a part of, getting hit by a comet or a scalar weapon or some sort of impact, you'd have to patch it. You'd have to fix it. And again, we don't know what kind of metals, plastics, ceramics, micas, fill in the blank, building material sciences 101, the actual finished layers. And yes, for those who are really steeped in it, there is a there is a back room at the Cairo Museum. And a couple packs of smokes later, you will find out that there are pieces still left. A lot of people don't know this, of the casing that was on the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
And they are very consistent in depth. And what a lot of people don't know is those casing stones are covered in hieroglyphs. And not just from eyewitness accounts, from archaeologists that I know that have seen them, they made it really clear. These are not chiseled like, you know, the hyperbolic, you know, the hyperbolic ceiling,
yeah,
at the Serapeum, the giant boxes. These are very well machine cut hieroglyphs on a very consistent level of casing stone that is just truly unique and appears to be possibly an artificial casing. And so maybe the entire structure itself was hieroglyphs, and it told its story, or told the people's story, our people's story. And that's what's been lost to us.
Mm.
And so there we go. What'd you find?
I actually a pretty interesting article here from the Geopolymer Institute. And I'm going to quote from it right now. The direction of this field varies with the ages. If the blocks of the pyramid have different magnetic orientations, it would be because they were assembled in a random manner. After having been extracted from the quarries, then cut, on the other hand, if the blocks have the same south-north magnetic orientation, this would prove that solidification took place at their current location at an extremely recent geologic age. So these blocks would have been made manually by humans on the spot. So,
wow.
Interesting stuff regarding, you know, the actual crystalline layers of it to begin with, whether how they were cut, everything else. But to know that we're just now getting into the world of, I mean, we've just figured out the formula, not the full formula like percentages, but at least the ingredients for Roman concrete.
Yeah, we're barely there.
We barely scratched the surface. All we did was figure out all the parts of it. Not the percentages or when to mix them together, which if anybody has mixed concrete en masse, like greater than a bucket of concrete, it becomes pretty scientific pretty quick if you want concrete poured right.
It does.
And it is a very specific endothermic reaction that happens with that stuff. So it really is very much chemistry and everything else. And to see the fact that, yeah, there were geopolymers used to adhere those blocks together, things like that. Whenever you start looking at sites like in South America, where it literally looks like the blocks were poured into place and left to stand.
Now, the Great Pyramid, when Dr. Joseph Davidovits did that, they found spots. Like, you know, there were repair spots.
Mm.
So
yep.
What was interesting was a researcher from Yale and a Egyptologist independently picked up the research and confirmed it, that there was geopolymer patching. So the antiquity of any American bridge, for those of you listening in this country, and quite frankly, I think outside of Europe, anywhere modern construction and rebar is used, if you go under a bridge built even 10, sadly, within a decade, but you go under a bridge that was built in the 60s or, you know, the original Eisenhower project, and there are, mind you, I'm in the Twin Cities and we're fully aware of how badly it can go when our entire 35W collapsed into the Mississippi River. And that was tragic and difficult. And that was a couple hundred feet. And we can't build concrete bridges to last 40 years. And you're looking at constructions in the Roman periods lasting to this 3,000, 2,000, 1,800 years with no issues. So how much antiquity is within a structure like the Great Pyramid that has polygonal construction on it? So it has the earthquake work. It has nubs that you see in Tiwanaku and Pumapunku and Machu Picchu. It has the same things that you see over in South America and other megalithic sites. So when Dr. Joseph David Ovitz does evidential reporting of geopolymer patching, where are we when we look at the age and antiquity of the Sphinx, where you have Dr. Robert Schock saying, well, it's tens of thousands of years old, and you have a construction like the Great Pyramid that might have to do with energy work or picking up the earthly, you know, dealing with energies and frequencies that don't involve explosions and oil and you name it, but are a giant machine that when it gets hit by a meteor or has a malfunction, you know, how do you patch it? Well, you just use a geopolymer. And we're not taking into account the antiquity of the repairs. I mean, were they done 10,000 years ago? Were they done 100,000? Were they done 8,000, 10,000, 50, 60, you know, pre Mount Toba going off? Was the last repair done 100,000? Were they somehow a creative dynastic recipe that they took, like the Charles, you know, like the analysis of the Perry Reese or the Perry Reese map, you know, of Antarctica being in a map from 1530 from older information? Was there an old recipe for that the dynastic Egyptians used to mix a cocktail that for them would have been very advanced? And again, is a Roman concrete or a Tartaria recipe of concrete, does it really shout back to the allegorical survivor advanced ancient culture that was still trying to, in close proximity, help primitive people get out of the survivor mode of the final death throes of the Younger Dryas and get back to farming and try to get them out of being, you know, nomads? And there are questions here that if we table all the facts, I think it's a very fascinating world for us to get into and start actively seeking the answers.
Well, in number one, you've got to be willing to ask the questions to seek answers. And I know we have differing opinions on Graham Hancock, things like that. But
Graham Hancock.
I love Graham Hancock. But the one thing that even Stephen Myers, who we have on the show regularly, the one thing that we are told straight up from Egyptology, I've heard it my whole life, hieroglyphs get you into the afterlife. You need them. You got to have the spells up on your tomb wall. So why does Egyptology keep telling us that this chamber, it's the king's chamber and is his tomb and sarcophagus, has nothing in it? Smooth granite walls, not a single carved hieroglyph. And it's really interesting. Now, one of the things that we've rabbit-holed on this show over the last many months is the fact of just how fast a technology disappears.
Yeah.
I've right down here next to me, I've got a mini disc player.
Wow.
Those were a thing.
You got Def Leppard in that deck?
No, but I do have Radiohead. I do have Radiohead, the Bends.
Okay, computer.
I want to say it's the Bends, I think.
On
mini disc. But that is just a prime example of a technology that has popped up, was useful, really horribly marketed. Had they waited 5 years, I think it would have taken off. One of those that was truly visionary. Like, it was years until we saw rewritable CDs
on the
market. But yeah, here was something that in your pocket, you could be like, oh, I want to take song number 2 and make it after song number 8. Boop, boop. And then you open up the disc and you slide the little window. And just like a disc on your computer, it was safe. You couldn't write over it. It was wicked cool. However, knowing how to use that, knowing how to, or even finding the device to be able to get information off of one, getting harder and harder.
True.
And that is within the last 20, 25 years. You know, that's just an example. Another one that I give all the time is feel free to go out and find yourself a master woodworker. I'll wait.
Oh, good luck.
Feel free to go out and find somebody that can, like, with a hammer and a chisel, or a mallet and a chisel, rather, carve you a wooden Indian. You know? Like, a master craftsman. Hard to find. Yet still in our parents' generation, 30, 40, 50 years ago, very easy to find.
Yep.
So when you're talking about something in the scope of the Great Pyramid of Giza and the time that it took to build, very, very likely that the dude who knew the mixture to build the casing stones, hey, he may have died sans apprentice, Jack. What do we do now?
Right.
You know, right. Now we literally have to come up with another technology to stand on top of his shoulders. Like, we somewhat know what to do, but the real recipe is lost. And it doesn't take long from there for that to become a lost technology or even an abandoned technology by a civilization. So when you start looking once again at the Great Pyramid of Giza, its shape, the way it's used, the fact that there are even explosion, what look like to be burn marks or explosion marks. I've always loved the theory of the Great Pyramid of Giza being used as a hydrogen generator.
Yeah, that one's interesting.
And also, and the idea of just hydrolyzing lime, things like that, which would be perfect in a granite thing like this. You would end up with a great heat expenditure, and you would have to have vents that you would be able to control the baffles, you know, to collect all of that. And every once in a while, you may get a really big boom that just might rattle the complex a little bit. And maybe you got to go repair some cracks.
Well, there is, there were early reports along with Saqqara, a number of their pyramids. One of the things that I find interesting is when we look at those interior spaces, a lot of people don't think about what they were found like, or that it was documented that there was actually like a plaster on the wall.
Yeah.
And not only was there a finished plaster on the wall, there was also, in the case of the Great Pyramid, you also have, well, a lot of the structures over there, there is indications of salt water, of them being flooded.
Yep.
And so the question is, were they accidentally flooded? Which I probably think was the case. But then you have a lot of indications of natural spring water under a lot of the constructions. And that not being managed anymore has put a lot of chambers in different places underwater. But then the main structure of that pyramid and Menkaure, or, the third, well, what's left, what we now think of as three pyramids, when in reality there was, like I said, there was probably at least 7. How many were dynastic, don't know. But the interior of that chamber, was that finished plaster another indicator of dynastic use where they did? I mean, both theories can be true. They could have plastered the interior of that space. It could have had hieroglyphic writing on it. It could have had constructions that indicate that it was a tomb. Pick how many years? Hundreds?
Sure.
Thousands? It wouldn't matter because it doesn't date back to the original use. Everything about this construction appears. And what's so deceptive, I love this photo that you have up because you're looking at the Great Pyramid's innards. From what we can tell is it's and the problem is, depending on where your knowledge base is or fascination with the Great Pyramid, it doesn't show you the swivel doors that are on the exterior. It doesn't show the other spaces they found. It doesn't indicate when they did the muons. The French researchers had a theory about there being an internalized zig winding up spiral walkway.
Yeah.
And again, you can see that in the muons and in the, not only do we have a great space that I don't know why we're not drilling into it yesterday. Although I know, but the,
why do you think? I'll say why I think, and then you can say why you think. I think quite honestly, the whole reason we have not gone beyond those lower chambers, which we know to be connected to the water sources.
Yep.
Underneath. And that's a big part of Stephen Meyer's book is the fact that they built the pyramid as a water pump, as a means by which to pump water out of the ground. And if you start looking at the design of it, very similar to a single stroke engine, you know, and if you're talking about just a chemical means of combustion to make a big thump upstairs to suck stuff out, not a bad idea.
No.
But it there's a lot that goes into it. And to see, once again, like you said, the muon study that was done, I don't think they allow the digging below that or below the Great Sphinx.
Well, there is a
because
room.
I think they would all lose jobs.
Oh, Jared. I think they would all, much
like if I would love to be on an Egypt tour and be like, wow, so did they just want to doom this dude to his death or what? Like, he's just never getting into the afterlife? Like, they spent all this time building a temple to him just to be like, ah, screw you.
You know, Chris, there's the problem with what, it's totally funny, but it's also true because
it's sad funny.
Well, it's so sad funny because one, it's not wrong. They just, even if they were 100% proven right that for 100 years, 200 years, 1,000 years, it was a tomb, doesn't mean that's what it was when they built it.
Yeah.
And, or for most of the time. And I think personally that here's something I think it's so obvious to everyone who's not been indoctrinated. Or those that are willing to, that they were indoctrinated, but they know they're wrong. They know the truth. And I think they need to hear this from people who have always been, I think it's no different than making movies. I think they need to hear that we are their fans. I know it's been hard to be funded, but because you're wrong about something you've either been teaching or something you've been believing yourself or perpetuating through books and publications. We don't care that you're wrong. The only person who's going to fire you is yourself. You're so tied up and not, it's ironic. No one really wants to fire the people that are wrong. The only people who want to fire anyone are the people who are wrong. They want to fire the people who are right, who aren't even hired. They're not even on their team. They're obsessed with either proving wrong the truth. They're more invested in that and protecting their own hubris, which just does make you look embarrassingly simple and ignorant.
It kind of does. You know, when it boils down to it, when it comes down to the fact of, suppression of knowledge, suppression of evidence, even non-acceptance of what is there.
I don't understand what has been shown through testing. It's just like Shaggy, you know, picture this, you know, we were in the bat, you let her catch you. It's like, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
What? It's just, but it's, you were right there.
Yeah.
It wasn't me.
Yeah. No. And it's mind blowing to me because I say it on the show all the time that is how science is not static by definition. Science is not static. No.
No, but it's forever in change.
It's forever in flux. Every law is up to question.
I agree, but
every law is up for reproof regularly.
I would be more impressed with a researcher who's willing to keep running like SpongeBob and Patrick, like Patrick and fall flat on his face and get up and keep running, fall on his face and keep running.
Nothing but respect.
Yeah.
Hey, doggedly pursue. I don't care if it's the tales of you know, like merman, like we were showing. It doesn't matter. If you want to doggedly pursue, why the heck these bags show up across the world in every ancient civilization and what they're about? Pursue it.
Bags
go out and look
important.
It up. But whatever happens, and like I've told you before about projects, things like that, I approach it from the fact of I am there to document something. I am not there to put my twist on it.
Right.
I'm not there to put my zing or my zeal on it. I am there to document an occurrence, you know, and it's funny to me and always an immediate tell whenever I show up at somebody's property and they're like, oh, you know, I'm targeted this and that. And I start pulling out things like, you know, my gas leak detector, or my Geiger counter. First, and they're like, oh, yeah. Whoa, what are you pulling that out for? I'm like, well, let's see if maybe you live on a fault line.
Yeah.
You know, let's see if maybe there isn't some gamma radiation leaking up through your sub basement, something like that, before we jump to somebody a mile down the road with an electronic weapon.
Yeah,
we need to disprove what is provable and leave the anomaly. And once we have just the anomaly, now we got something that we can study because we have gotten rid of all the extraneous. But you have to be willing to view every facet of that gym.
Yep.
And polish every facet of it.
I'd rather,
an equal amount of fervor.
Yep. It would be more interesting to see people just, hey, we got this wrong. Here's what we know.
Yeah.
Again, finding the college that comes up with more questions than answers would be the more intelligent one. You know, it's like, well, we don't have this answer. Well, how many things do we not have answers for? Well, how many students would you like to start training to get those answers?
Yeah.
How many? And then you can start getting the hubristic award for, we had 100 million questions last year and we solved a million. Come join us. You know, I think on one hand, they say you have a group that says everyone should have a college education. Then you have another group that I find it indignant. It's incredible. You'll have a group that'll say, well, if everyone has a degree, what are they worth? And it's like, well, I thought the point was to not have idiots and to have everyone educated. It was, the point was to create wisdom, but it's not. We all know this. So a paradigm shift, a massive paradigm shift, where you have more college franchise locations than Subway or Quiznos or Domino's. And they are literally like, well, I was the graduating class of Section 6 of the Mayan city of Guatemala of Section 20. And we uncovered 20 pyramids to the ground and we went 30 feet in the ground and we got this far through 27 unknown cultures and we came up with 1 million more questions. That's the academic environment that should exist, and it doesn't. Instead, we have this lethargic, backward, Victorian, ancient, hubristic, ignorance. Oh my God. Self-aggrandizing.
I say it all the time. We need more Magellans. He was the one that was like, nope. So you think I'm going to fall off the world? Let's find out. Who wants to come with me and find out?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we say it regularly that was one of the last big revelations other than like, you know, germs. The existence of germs, the existence of planets beyond Neptune, that kind of stuff, Pluto, that kind of thing. I mean, honestly, it's like until the 1500s, it was pretty well like anathema to say that the world was round or that the sun was the center of the solar system.
You know,
it was witchery. You would be burned or driven out of town.
You know, I heard the story of the man who said, you know, I'm pretty sure we need to wash our hands before we birth children. And it's disgusting. I heard the whole story on, of all places, it was NPR.
NPR?
Yeah. You remember that one? It was so depressing. I catch it where this guy literally says, you know, we need to wash our hands before we help a woman give birth for the child and for the woman. Of course, that's the way you're supposed to do it. But this guy was told he was a nut job, literally murdered in an insane asylum. They discredited him. They burned him at the stake. That is quintessential, for the most part, academia.
Yeah.
That is it. It hasn't changed.
Yeah. Not that far back, you know. No. And we are not, I will say this. We have the tendency, but are not by nature as humanity a deep species, my man.
Well, you know, I think at this point, I don't think we realize how urgent it is for us to reactivate, in quotes, those superhuman abilities, those Wim Hof consciousnesses, and our autonomic nervous system, and our meditative unconscious states becoming conscious. I do think our abilities to physically move and to create and meditate, there are, again, we have psychosomatic drugs that are amplifying what I think are actually conscious states that we could live and exist in, that we of course can't move in that direction yet. But my curiosity is to actually get us from being curious into actually being those things,
activating that in reality.
Yeah. And so it's not just, I think, a fun conversation, but everyone out there listening, I'm sure there's different points that might tingle their connection to the human ether, to the collective consciousness, to genetic memory, and wherever they are in their meditations or their systems. The more we positive gene effect, the more you eat the right way, the more you movement complexity and change your meditations and change your mindsets and work with what we've seen in on the quantum level of water consciousness. I think that there's a lot of methodologies or labels we've put, like the Emoto, Victor Schauberger, and all of that work, and what we've done with second sight and, or like you said, remote viewing and these paranormal things. In reality, somehow this is a conscious system that was part of a biotechnical system that was also inclusive of these large advanced ancient structures, and they predate dynastic peoples. But dynastic peoples did some really creative stuff, and whether they're hydrostatically moving blocks or not, I don't think the advanced humans that were engineering, I think, biologies, not because they thought, you know, hey, I just, you know, like some people make apps for the app store. Oh, yeah. Look, I made a new butterfly. I don't think they were just doing it for funsies. I think it was a choice.
Well, there was a difference. There was a difference. And, you know, once again, harking back to how fast things disappear. I remember my grandfather, like, had articles in the newspaper about, like, the daikon radishes that he would grow that were, like, you know, 12 pounds. Things like that. Our connection to such things, and once again, to bring it back to the beginning of the whole conversation when we were talking about the people that obviously built the complex up at America's Stonehenge, intricately tied to the world, to the movement of stars, to the seasons, to what to eat, what not to eat, what's safe to eat. All of that was intimate knowledge to them. It was beyond sacred knowledge. It's literally that avatar concept of, like, it is what makes them live.
Yeah.
So it becomes part of their religion.
Yeah. And then, and the problem is when you have 50 or 80, that's all being that on being a true statement on its own, but adding on to it, if you get 100 years of it going from a factual point to it, that's these waves that really blur things, where 100 years goes by and it becomes a religion. or a belief,
yeah,
not a fact.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you have hundreds of years or 400 years or 300 years, if the society remains, where something that was once a fact becomes a belief system. And then if that entire belief system is, or and society is wiped out in a way, you have an abandonment period, or you have another type of society having taken it over, imposing their own opinions, and you have this constant...
It's either adoption or abandonment.
It's constantly abrasive Velcro, is how I'm going to call it, of societal info.
Yeah.
And relations. It's connecting and sticking, but then when you tear it apart every time, or even a little bit, it's always ruining it a little bit, and you're putting it back together, it's still sticking, but it's not sticking in any way you want to pull it apart again, but then it is. And it's just, it's so, it was, I just think we had such a period of chaos in those primitive cultures that were using those rock sites. And again, here's the other thing. We know that, well, Dennis knows that there was no on that, those plains below where America's Stonehenge is, on what's left of a ground down glacial mountain. But that area, it would have been on a high plain that was known, at least to modern archaeology and paleoanthropology, that those acres and acres and miles of that below valley was burned so that it was grazing for game. And so what's great about this photo that you just brought up is that all those trees, what, there's a couple interesting things. Those big trees, some of them are over a foot wide, but all of those trees were wiped out in a massive hurricane 80 something years ago, 90 something years ago. And then prior to that, there was no trees. So were these any wood structures that would have been coinciding with these stone structures, did they just rot away, burn up, get used for firewood? The reality is you're looking at a site where literally all the trees, there's a 110 acre site that Dennis Stone owns, that's been in their family 70 years. It's an active archaeological site for over 70 years and lots of scientific papers. This is not just a bunch of people walking around feeling it.
Yeah. Well, and once again, this is a prime example of one of them that I was talking about, where I was like, have you ever had the interior resonant frequency of one of these chambers found?
Well,
because by doing that, you could figure out if perhaps they were using that structure as, once again, a place to meditate, chant, om, that would vibrate at a certain frequency and even vibrate your body that way, or even show you the direction, getting inside of it and darkening your surroundings so that you would be able to use these other stones as spotting stones for finding other alignments, things like that.
Yeah, so you
just
know,
just a couple different.
But on that photo, you know, the big chamber is at the end of the giant table there where the green is, the grass. So for those of you looking at the screen, there looks like a patch of green where the mouse just to the left of the, so if you go across, yeah, right where your mouse is now, that's the large chamber. So there's enough room in there. It's L-shaped. That chamber you can stand almost fully upright in at 6'2". Wow. And then under the table, there is a window. Like you could shout under the table into that space. So now, dynastically, at some point, were there primitive people that maybe used it as an altar? Was it an ancient cold stone for ice cream? Was it for cranberry crushing and apple crushing?
And of course, to me, the connection there between the chamber and the what's called the altar stone really does ring back to like ancient Greece in their temples. And the way that they had ported sound holes for the priests to chant and things like that, make it seem like the, you know, the beast that was near the fire was still alive. All kinds of things. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah. And there is, besides that one hole, I mean, the archaeoacoustics, I think, are pretty limited. I know Dennis has, there have been people who have done some of that work. They've done a really great job of starting to try to get rid of some of these trees that are destroying the site. Mm-hmm. I love trees, but I do not love them when they're destroying stuff we haven't figured out.
Yeah. And I mean, once again, if you look at the size of these trees, they are smooth in the last 15 to 20 years. And yeah, directly on top of what would be these cavernous structures that are built. Yeah, so definitely encroaching upon their structural integrity.
Yeah, they need to go. And again, they wouldn't have been there. Anybody who occupied this site, they were burning the valley below for game and to keep it grazing land, so they didn't have to go far for hunting and gathering. So you would look down on 20 miles, 30 miles of just a, you know, just between width and not even the length of the valley, but you would be able to see all the game you ever could have wanted. And up on here, maybe 7,000, 6,000, 5,000 years ago, any harvested trees were part of structures or part of this building. And then you have a family that moved here to this construction in the 1800s. You know, this thing was occupied, but what was it in its entirety? What was it in its ancient periods? I don't know. And
yeah,
and over 7,000 or 6,000 years at a minimum, it could have meant many things to many people. The archaeoastronomy alone, along with the archaeoacoustics from the chambers that do exist, they may indicate not origin cultures, or they could be for a hot minute related, but then separated by even what points of the astronomy they were worshiping or caring about. But to your point about hunting, time of year, whether or not they should be moving, this is a site, by the way, that maybe Dennis did talk about it, but it relate other mountains, other, like past this stone, there is another, you know, 30 miles away, there's another mountainside, and there would have been no trees. These trees would not have been there. You would have been able to see all the way to the other mountainside. If there was a campfire, you could have communicated with each other. You may have even, I don't know what the echoing and the acoustic version is. You would have been able to get maybe a communication without leaving your top. And so were these sites mountaintop to mountaintop to mountaintop? And were they intentional? Yeah, some of these stones are a couple hundred tons. And if you were the colonist that they say, the shoemaker that lived on this site during colonial times, they're like, well, they did all this. And it's like, I'm never going to be bored enough trying to survive as that I'm going to stack this dolmen. I'm not going to stack a dolmen. Just not going to do it. There is a major currently dormant back at the site. There's a major dormant not far from what you're looking at right now. Fault line. In fact, it's right there. Oh. The grass line to the right in this photo, that is actually on a sleeping fault line. Wow. That is the fault line. In fact, the shift up in the stone, that's actually a fault line. So it's so funny you were talking about, like, maybe we should find out if you're getting nuclear irradiated.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because if you go back to like ancient Greece, the Oracle of Delphi, things like that, like, yeah, that's pretty much what it was traced back to, was the fact that like there was somebody sitting there near a natural fault line with a natural gas source
googly, googly,
leaking
googly
out all day. Just and every once in a while, yeah, you know, would go into a visionary seizure. Because, well, oxygen and not having it, you know.
I bet you saw some stuff along with almost dying of some toxic poisoning.
So, and only a chosen few could be it. Well, because the others died.
The other ones got cancer. They've been coughing blood.
The gods really didn't want to talk through them. Oh, they were really upset with us offering them up.
Yeah, right. It's amazing, you know, how people go at this.
But to think of this as a lost technology, to think of this as, once again, a shift of vibration, even if you're looking at America's Stonehenge and its alignments, To think of it as a way to keep yourself in tune with the environment around you. Once again, something that people, even Anglos not too long ago, were very tuned into, like within the last 50 to 60 years, and not so much anymore, man. And it's really interesting to see that leap of technology and how fast that happens. And then to kind of think about it in that back engineering sense what if the technology that you used on the daily just went away?
Well, especially if it was a solid state hard drive. Yeah. A solid state, all these high quartzites. There's so many things about we have parallel successes with crystal technology, where really it's more crystal woo-woo, where we have some this energy. We know there's energies. We know that there are sciences behind crystals, that's why they're in all our computers. But what if these large quartzite structures and the way they were, again, I mean, I don't understand, if I can't get my head around the fact that we can buy a grow crystal kit. Mm. We just grow crystals. And it's like, how does that work? And like, how can I do that? And right. And I you're right. We don't have time, because I really could get into this. But
I know.
But what if we were growing our own solid state hard drives? Yeah. I mean, there have been some guys that have made some great jokes about, hey, some kid's going to stumble into some new, you know, flash technology, and they're going to plug into the Great Pyramid of Giza, and it's going to turn back on or download. Yeah. And so, you know, we have the core sampling from, you know, this just hit the news. I think we chatted about this once, for everyone who don't recall, when they found in the 1950s, a core sample was taken out of one of the original Sarsen stones at Stonehenge. And that, there you go. Yeah, of course they put the Bible on it. Oh my God.
Well, it's a voluminous book.
I get it.
But yeah, we're already talking about storing data on crystals, everything else.
So the Sarsen stone is mostly silicrete. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know that until they had the destructive core sample that was returned to them from that couple in Texas that had taken it because it had helped at the site. And so I think that some of the original stones represent construction material from what would have been a more advanced construction. And then what you have, the iteration at Stonehenge, one is completely interpretive and from the 50s and 60s. And two, you have the last 4,000 years of use that is sheerly just abandonment use. But the Sarsen stone being silicretes, how many other constructions are using crystal technology that is actually memory storage that we just don't even look at and recognize it as storage? I mean, who would look at that little chip that you just scrolled by and say that was technology?
Yeah.
That's just a
literally, or that anything is stored on it.
No, not definitely not billions of things, or for billions of years.
The exact number was 13 billion years at room temperature. Able to store on that little thing, able to store 380 terabytes for 13 billion years. You're literally talking about the idea of one of those being the Library of Alexandria.
Right. And it's so funny, because along with it, there was, and I keep meaning to give this thing some street cred, the second biggest, or they always say it's the second, because now they've already stated Alexandria, but there was the Antikythera device. Mm-hmm. Was likely from a Greek library. And there was actually 9 to 11 large libraries like Alexandria. And we know of all of them. We have them by name, and I am blanking. I think it starts with a P for the Greek one. I can't believe I'm blanking on it. But it's where they think possibly the Antikythera device was coming from or going to. And at the same time, we have these repositories of knowledge that clearly represent a more ancient period of knowledge. And meanwhile, we still have that, slightly available to almost no one, Vatican Library.
Yeah. I mean, you do. I mean, you can get some generalized access and go and visit, but you do have to be a researcher of some insane credibility to be able to get into the annals of such things.
Oh, there are some other requirements. Did you know? You have to request exactly what it is you're looking for.
Yep.
You have to know where it is. How the hell would you know where it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're supposed to know what it is, where it is. And if it ain't there, and it's not where you say it is,
sorry,
you have to leave.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's some limiting factors of data that is actually world. It's world right to know news, and they're hoarding it. And I think that should be illegal eventually, but hey.
Well, you know, there was the whole group of hackers that claimed the fact that all data was from God.
Oh, boy.
And was the sovereign property of mankind. Pretty interesting concept.
I'm hearing myself in my mind, and what I'm about to say even shocks myself. But the Catholic Church, the Vatican, has stored this information. I'm going to say it.
Go ahead.
If we're going to make it public availability.
Sure.
We have to pay the Catholic Church for the fact that they have stored it, and not an easy task.
No.
And the amount of technology and effort they have put into filing, maintaining, and having that library, can't believe I'm saying this, but they deserve to be paid.
It's a lot. It's a lot. It's massive.
And I can't fathom as a technology guy, and for you, can you imagine what the energy costs are to keep it either cooled or not humid or dry or
heated?
It must be horrible. The money and tens of millions or billions of pieces of information that they couldn't hire enough people to do it.
I think from works of art to chunks of buildings to
layers and layers. I mean, oh my God, you know, it's 40 years ago.
It's literally the equivalent of the Smithsonian meets the Library of Congress.
Yeah. And I think that if there was a way to baby step, a way to compensate the Vatican, the church, to get them paid so that we can just get legit access and start digitizing. And here's the problem. You have parchments that once someone got smart enough to x-ray for iron, they've been reused over and over and over. And you have layers of information that predate Bible information that have Greek and Roman stories on it. We have parchment. So digitizing what the words that we see isn't going to just cut it. Every document scanned would have to be scanned with every layer of technology we have in order to see if whatever information's on that. And then I don't mean throw the document away, but then there's DNA and assorted other information about the parchments themselves.
Yep. That is something that we talk about regularly on the show with researchers when it comes to evidence as opposed to DNA, which can be very, very hard to store properly, everything else, and even to maintain a usable amount of it for later use. Frequently, what you get is enough for your study.
Well, we have sedimentary DNA testing now, so we
have, and that's what I'm saying though, is that we have vast new means by which to test a lot of this material despite where it's coming from, we be at the Vatican archives, what have you.
So right, and I think from a profit center standpoint, also on a richness of information, everyone stands to benefit by paying the organization what we need in order to get access, in order to digitize every format for the world to study, we would get so much more done. But also for all the other things, this information should be paid for, and they should be given a pat on the back, and we should be working together to help its preservation. But the accessibility factor is abhorrent, it's outrageous, and it's a crime against humanity.
I would tend to agree on that end. You know, the fact of access to any of it and research, because once again, we're looking at a paradigm that may change. It's
on every level.
It's people's careers. It's people who have numerous books that are now being used in the halls of academia.
All of what you're saying. Yeah.
Pseudo religious.
Well, right. And those academic books are hundreds of dollars. They're used for classes. They're used for degrees, and they're completely out of left field and wrong.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Yeah, some of them. Yeah. It just happens to be, you've got a fantastic publisher and can get things out there, and you know, much like any of it, how much can you pay to get it out in front of the audience?
Yeah. And the platform for asking the questions, the platform for experimenting with the questions you want to ask, that's what we need help with. That's what the army of listeners, and that's what the rest of us are for, is to field experiment with what it is our questions are, and to experience not just a factual reclamation of our past, but to reactivate abilities that could cure cancer or correct an imbalance in your body that has been causing you frustration or pain, or you know, there appears in the historical record a more durable way to be a human being, and we seem to have meshed it between our technologies that we think are natural biotech and our ancient constructions, that it's not a matter of a woo woo feng shui. It seems to all be woven together in a fabric that we don't see or recognize.
Yeah, absolutely. Jared, thank you so much for your time, man. It is always a pleasure talking with you about these topics. I cannot wait for the new version of It's Not Us, Worse, or It's Not Aliens, Worse, It's Us, to come out. Please do keep us in cycle with that. Until then, let everybody know where they can go to follow you, where they can go to keep up with your work, where they can go to subscribe and get all of your fantastic work.
Yeah. So for now, go to Not Aliens. We have a member area. Please support us any way you can there. Wait for the book to come out. Definitely would like you to do that. You can go to Not Aliens on YouTube, but I would prefer, we're trying to port everything to Rockfin. You can go to Rockfin and Not Aliens. We are there, Not Aliens. And then I need to update this, you know, my page, but you need to send me some links. And then for next iteration of the website, you know, it's not going to change the .com. So it's notaliens.com, Not Aliens on Rockfin. And the book will eventually, of course, be available on Amazon.
Awesome.
And my website. I'll have signed copies, and I'll be bringing with me to lectures and events. So that will be a thing.
Absolutely, my man. Well, once again, thank you as always for coming on. I love our conversations. They are always fun. They are always energized. They always go places. And talking with you about technologies and what we have lost as a society, and what I guess even the changing concept of what a technology is, you know, people just plain out forgetting that, you know, believe it or not, like a shovel and a hoe is technology.
Yeah.
You know,
and copper shovel.
Go. I guarantee you go bring a shovel from Ace Hardware to a dude in the 1500s, you would be like a god to him.
and you know what? On that note,
he would think you are literally Prometheus reborn, folks.
The depth of that, though, is when you have these super elite gardeners that know that gardening with copper tools is better than cast steel.
Yeah.
So we have a whole other Pandora's box, because you bring up a point where there's a known relationship with the plants and the energy in the soil, and they use copper.
Yeah.
Well, there's a whole other reason for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to you and I, we're just dumb enough to think, well, one shovel's prettier than the other. But other than that, we wouldn't think of it as that there's a magnetic relationship, that there's a frequency energy relationship of a copper spaded shovel versus a big hole.
Yeah, you know,
And versus our hands, you know, it's like we'd be thrilled with a handle. And
that's because there's a difference between digging a plant up and harvesting a plant.
Yeah. Well,
big difference.
Those layers. We digress.
Yeah. So once again, Jared, thank you as always for coming on the show. Hold the line while we close things out. While you are online, everybody, checking out notaliens.com and all the amazing work of Jared Murphy, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is our website. That is where you can find our store, CuriousRealm.com/store. You can buy books by our guests, equipment that we talk about on the show. You can download our free app. You can stop by and visit the Knowledge Vault. Make sure to stop on by and visit our Share Your Story link, CuriousRealm.com/story. If you have been touched by the paranormal, if you have had a paranormal experience, if you are a targeted individual, if you have been abducted or had any kind of paranormal or cryptid experience, stop on by, share your story with us, and we will share your story anonymously with our guests on the show, our researchers. We will bring these topics to them and maybe be able to get you some answers. So thank you so much, as always, for everybody, for staying tuned, for listening to the show, for supporting our guests and supporting all that we do. Make sure to take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.